Good morning. Senate Education Committee is called to order. Today is Monday, February 14th, 2022. The time is 9:03 a.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. Senator Stevens and Senator Machicki will not be joining us today. Thank you to Mary Gwen, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today, we will hear another update from the Department of Education. We're going to welcome Heidi Teschner and Deborah Riddle to the presenter's table. And Ms. Teschner, if you care to put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Yes, gladly. Good morning, Chair Holland and members of the Sun Education Committee. For the record, my name is Heidi Teschner, and I am the Acting Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. With me today is Deborah Riddle. She is our Division Operations Manager for Division of Innovation and Education Excellence, and Kelly Manning, our Deputy Director of Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. This morning, we're going to provide the committee with just an update on the public school funding formula, where we're at with the current fiscal year 22 and 23 student counts, and then address some additional state-funded programs that are also affected by the student counts. Then Deb Riddle is going to talk about accountability, and then Deputy Director Manning will talk about assessments.
Please proceed.
So I'm just going to proceed on to slide 4. So the legislature has provided a formula and statute for funding school operational costs. This is referred to as the public school funding formula, more commonly referred to as the foundation formula. The foundation formula was adopted under Senate Bill 36 in 1998 and implemented in 1999, and is defined in Alaska Statute Title 14, Chapter 17. The funding for each district is a combination of state aid, required local contribution, and federal impact aid. I did want to mention that the regional education attendance areas do not have a required local contribution, and there are 19 REAA school districts in Alaska. A school district is only eligible for foundation funding as calculated under the formula and set out in statute. The first step into determining state aid for a district is determining the average daily membership, or the ADM, for each school. For the committee's reference, we've provided a couple of links on this slide. The first link takes you to the school finance website, and from here you can drill down to the foundation formula website, where we have various publications, historical average daily memberships, data, the state aid and base student allocation histories, as well as the annual foundation reports, as well and our disparity test calculations. In addition, I provided the committee with two supplemental handouts. Handout number one is a 7-page document titled the Public School Funding Program Overview, which walks through each step of the formula, and is also the second link provided on this slide. And handout number two is a 1-page document titled the Alaska Public School Funding Foundation Formula History, and it outlines the changes made to the formula over time. Again, just for your reference. As a reminder to the committee, the average daily membership, or the ADM, is the defined term for student count data, and is the number of enrolled students during the 20 school day count period that ends the fourth Friday of October. For the fiscal year 21-22 school year, the 20 school day count period began on September 27th and ended on October 22nd, 2021. In order to determine state aid, districts must submit their student count data, their ADM, to the department within 2 weeks after the end of the count period, and that's in accordance with Alaska Statute 14.17.600A. For the 2021-22 school year, those numbers were due to the department November 5th, 2021. The table, moving on to slide 6, the table at the top of slide 6 shows the statewide enrollment counts. I'm going to use my mouse just to help show. So we have fiscal year 21 actuals, fiscal year 22 projected, our fiscal year 22 OASIS update. This is our reconciled counts after we've removed to ensure that no student is counted more than one full-time ADM. And then our 23 projected counts. And at the bottom of slide 6 just kind of provides the committee with what when that data was submitted and how we use it.
Senator Hughes.
I have a question about the enrollment. Thank you for presenting to us this morning on a Monday morning, going into this depth of stuff. Such fun. Need your coffee. The 20-day student count that was set, I'm assuming it was 1998 when the statute was passed. What was that based on? Was that what other states were doing? Was there some reason that school districts were promoting that? I'm just wondering, why don't we just take an average enrollment through the year instead of specifying a certain number of days?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's an excellent question and predates me, so I don't know if I have a solid answer for you. Obviously, that is what the statute defines as a 20-day school count period. I know other states, some states base their formulas on attendance versus membership, but Alaska is a membership, and we only have the one count period based on current statute.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And is it acting assistant commissioner? Is that how we say it?
Through the chair, acting deputy commissioner.
Acting deputy commissioner. I just, and I look ahead to, and I know you're going to get into this in more detail, page 11. But this decline in student counts, just to be clear, that means that we will actually end up projecting less income spent in this coming fiscal year on education as a result of the decline, somewhere in the neighborhood of $18 million.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes. Based on the 23 projected student counts that districts have provided the department, it is an $18 million decrease from fiscal year 22 to fiscal year 23.
And I'll ask more questions about that on page 11, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
Just to talk a little bit more about the top of slide 6 and hopefully answer additional more questions from you, Senator Begich. The fiscal year 22 OASIS, that's the online Alaska student ID system, is what OASIS stands for. These are, as I stated, the reconciled ADMs. So we've gone through, ensured no more than one student is counted, ensured no student is counted more than one ADM. This is, as you can see, there's the projected column is what districts thought they were going to have in fiscal year 22. And fiscal year, the OSS update is what we're actually seeing. So there is a decrease of just 1,842.96. And these are not a head count, but these are not a dollar amount either. These are just like the actual ADM count. And you're going to get decimals because some kids can be counted as half-time or three-quarter time, not a full time. So we're seeing a decrease from what they projected in brick-and-mortar students, but an increase in what they're still seeing in their correspondent students. When we look to the 23 projected compared to what we're seeing in the OASIS update, that far column, there is a still projecting a decrease in our brick-and-mortar, an increase in our correspondent students, and an overall decrease in the ADM. You can see that our ADMs are the actuals for 21. So this is like the overall student count for the state is 127, 015.3. And then it drops, actually goes up a little bit in our current count, but they're projecting a little bit less to 126, 803.67 for fiscal year 23. So again, these are the projections are what districts provide the department and what they think they're going to have in the next year. I'll get into a little more on the cost difference so you can see what that looks like in a couple of slides. Just a reminder to the committee on the hold harmless provision. So this was enacted in 2008 under House Bill 273. The provision is for those school districts experience a reduction in their brick and mortar school's average daily membership after it's been adjusted for the school size and the foundation formula. Eligibility is determined after the districts adjusted for school size, average daily membership are calculated and totaled for all schools within that district. The sum total of a district's adjusted for school size average daily membership is compared to the prior year's total, adjusted for school size, ADM, to determine if the decrease of 5% or more has occurred. And if that answer is yes, then the, we lock in that as a base year, and that is the base year for the next 3 years. The new school size adjustment with Hold Harmless continues through our foundation formula with all of those adjustments, which we'll adjust briefly on the next couple slides. This results in approximately 75% of the basic need calculation being restored in the first year. So the three-year step down is 75% the first year, 50% the second year, and 25% in the final year. And that allows for the overtime for districts to adjust to a lower budget. There are no questions. We'll move on. So slides 8 and 9 kind of provide the committee with just a look over high-level look at the foundation funding formula components. So after we have the school school district counts are reported, the average daily membership for each school is then applied to the school size factor to determine, and there's a table in statute that defines how to calculate that, and the product of that calculation is then used as a factor in the next step in the formula. So Alaska Statute 14.17.410 sets out the remaining steps in the formula for calculating the district's eligibility for state aid. And our handout number one, as I mentioned earlier, provides a more in-depth look at each step. So you can see, and there's an example in there of how each step is calculated. So slide 8 shows the multipliers that are used for determining a district's adjusted average daily membership. This includes taking the total average daily membership, applying those to the school size table, which we analyze, which is not shown on here. Then in this step is the school size table step is where we analyze for Hold Harmless. Then we multiply it by a district's cost factor, which is set out in statute, multiply by a special needs factor of 1.20, and then apply a vocational education factor of 1.015. We then add in our student, our special education intensive students, which is 13 times the base student allocation. And then we add in our correspondence average daily membership at 90%. I will note that the correspondence students are not included in any of these first columns. We add them in at the end at just 90%. So they're not double counted. The slide 9, just as the remaining steps to determine state aid. And after we have our adjusted average daily membership, then we multiply that by the base student allocation, which in statute is $5,930. And that gets us to basic need. And then there are three components that pay for basic need. There's a required local contribution. This is just for our municipal school districts. Then there's a deductible impact aid. And then that determines state aid. Then we add in the quality schools grant, which is $16 times the average, adjusted average daily membership. And then in total, we get our state aid entitlement. Slide 10 just provides the committee with a look at what the base student allocation has looked at since 1999 through fiscal year 23 projected. There have been a total of 11 increases to the base student allocation since 1999, and from the $3,940 in 99 to the $5,930 we have today is a 51% increase. The last increase to the base student allocation was in fiscal year 2017. In addition, I just want to point out that on this slide we include appropriations of one-time money outside of the foundation formula, and that has occurred 10 times since the formula was implemented, the last one being in fiscal year 2020, which was $30 million. And then there in 2021, which is not on here, but the governor vetoed a $30 million outside the funding formula.
Senator Begich.
And to be clear, he vetoed it in 20 and in 21. So there was $30 million in both of those years. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to be clear about that. There were two. There was a $30 million in fiscal 21. There was a $30 million for this fiscal year as well. Both were vetoed. So those $30 million. But I want to point out, in 2014, the change was voted on. It was a three-year change. So that was actually one legislative action that led to to multi-year increases. Is that right?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Please proceed.
So moving on to slide 11. So we talked about the top of slide 11 a couple slides ago. So I'll just focus on the bottom, and this is the funding portion. This goes back to Senator Begich, what you were stating earlier. If you look at the far right column, the fiscal year 23 projected to our fiscal year 22 projected, there's an $18.9 million decrease to the overall foundation funding formula. It's a 1.6% decrease.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. I forgot to mention in when I described the governor's vetoes of those $230 million, he said both times, I just want to put that on the record, that without a Reed's bill, without a reading bill, he wasn't going to be supporting additional resources. And I just think it's important to understand the context of those vetoes so that the work of this committee is not missed in regards to where the governor was going with this. He acknowledged the work of this committee, that there needed to be a Reed's bill, and that until there was a Reed's bill, those extra monies outside of the amount were likely to be vetoed. So those were his messages both times. I wanted to be clear about that. And this, Mr. Chairman, is what I've been talking about in terms of your and our committee's Reed's bill, and that with the decrease in population, we see a decrease in the amount of money that would be obligated to education, and as a consequence, an opportunity perhaps to address the work that's in the Reed's Act. So just doing a little advertisement here, if it's okay, Mr. Chairman, for the bill that this committee spent so many months working on. Thank you.
Many years. I mean,
so many years.
Well, this committee, so many
this
months.
This committee months, but years. Yes.
The legislature, so many years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
Again, I just want to share. So the fiscal year 22 OASIS to our fiscal year 22 projected, this is our current. So what we're seeing is that the district's projected overall a little bit higher totally, but they projected less brick and mortar. Well, we're seeing less brick and mortar and more correspondence than they originally projected for, but it's an $11.6 million increase to our current current year budget.
Clarification, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does this mean a combined total of $18 million over present year for that last column, or is it $20 million and then $18 million over what's coming out of FY22? So is that a combined total of close to $39 million reduction over present year, or is it the $18 million, is that just a projection over the over present year? So it's actually a slight increase. I mean, what are we looking at here?
So what we're seeing, if you look in the governor's fiscal year 23 budget, you're going to see an $18.9 million decrease based on the student counts that districts have provided. In the current year budget, and so basically the fiscal year 22 projected is what we would also consider as authorized. That is, so if you're just looking at Ledge Finance's reports, you're going to see the $18.9 million decrease. The current year, our 22 OASIS to our 22 projected, that is in the current year. So we are, based on what was authorized to what we're actually going to have to pay districts based on statute, it's an $11.6 million decrease. I don't have on here the comparison between our fiscal year 23 projected to our OASIS. But it's still going to be a slight decrease overall if you compare those 2 years.
Okay.
Dollar-wise.
And if I could ask, so some of the decreases due to 75% to hold harmless, some of it's held down to 25%, but some other decreases that go into this whole number are not fitting into the hold harmless formula. This is a spectrum of decreases, correct?
Chair Holland, yes. So the primary factor addressing the changes is due to hold harmless, because a lot of districts that were in 75% will now be in 50%. If they were in 21, they were most likely in 75%. So some of them have even transitioned to the 25% phase. But then we also have changes in our SPED counts, or intensive SPED counts, which are also a factor. in the overall total, but primarily hold harmless.
Thank you.
So the last slide that I'm going to present on, slide 12, just talks about additional state-funded programs that are also affected by the count period, the student counts, and that's our pupil transportation program and our residential schools program. So the pupil transportation program funding is based on the statutory formula in Alaska Statute 14.09.010. Pupil trans is only funded on the brick and mortar students, not we do not include correspondence students in that calculation. The fiscal year 22 appropriation was $71.4 million. The estimated actuals for fiscal year 22 is about $71.1 million. In addition, our fiscal year 23 projected amount is $71.8 million. This is based on, fully funded based on the statutory calculation and is a 367,100 increase over our fiscal year 22 appropriation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes.
On the pupil transportation, I'm not familiar with the formula for that or how that's set up, but is there anything factored in for rising fuel costs or for the number of miles? In other words, some districts are much tighter, and so they're not driving as many miles. I represent areas where things are really spread out. So is there anything factored in for fuel costs or miles?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes. So the formula for pupil trans was determined based on actual costs back in 2013. And then there was a couple implemented in 2015, and there was a couple years of a CPI increase. And I can get you the exact dates of those because I don't have them on top of my head. But the rising costs that districts might be experiencing with fuel or even just paying contractors for labor, those are not factored in because the formula has been set back in 2015 when it was implemented. So there has obviously been changes. Like I said, we did do a CPI increase to those per student factors that are in statute, but not for a number of years. So there would not, while districts might have those increases, they're absorbing them within their pupil transportation fund and supplementing it with their operating funds that they can transfer into their special revenue fund.
Okay. Follow-up, Senator Hughes.
And when was the last time the inflation, it was adjusted for inflation? Was that, did you say 2013?
No, through the chair. So we, the costs that determined the per student amounts were determined based on 2013 actuals. Those were implemented. Then there was a couple years, which I can't remember, so I'm going to follow up with the committee on when the couple years of CPI increase was. And then, I just don't remember off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
The last bit I want to talk about is the residential schools program. So this is also determined based on a statutory formula. It's in Alaska Statute 14-16-200. The funding outlined on the bottom of slide 12 represents the funding allocated for the 9 approved residential schools offered throughout the state. The funding for this program comes in 2 parts. There's a residential stipend, which is a per pupil monthly stipend rate multiplied by 9 months, and then it's multiplied by their actual student count for the residential school. And there's a one-time round-trip transportation reimbursement for students. The fiscal year 22 appropriation was just over $8.2 million. The estimated fiscal year 22 actual grants is about $4.8 million, a decrease of about $3.4 million. In a normal year, there are 8 school districts that operate the 9 approved programs, but in fiscal year 2022, only 7 were operational, and Bering Strait and North Slope were not operating a program due to the ongoing pandemic. So that's contributing to the reduced actuals that we're seeing for fiscal year 22. For fiscal year 23, the projected appropriation is just over $8.4 million. And this is a $228,000 increase over our fiscal year 22 appropriation. And that is due to an increment request in the department's budget for an increase to the Lower Yukon School District's Career and Technical Education Residential Program. They want to increase their bed count from 50 to 70 students, And through a partnership with the Anchorage School District and the University of Alaska, they want to bring in 20 students from rural communities to reside in the Lower Yukon facility and attend Alaska's Middle College for the entire school year. And then one last item to address is the handout number 3 that's been provided to the committee. It's a document titled State Funded Program Funding Changes Due to Enrollment Fluctuations. This document, the left 3 columns provide the changes by district of how much they're estimated to get for foundation, pupil transportation, and the residential schools, as well as providing the total federal COVID relief funding remaining to be spent, and that is as of January 26, 2022. And their fiscal year 21 unreserved fund balance. And then the far right column is the net total by district. And there's only one district, Tanana, that's projecting an overall decrease of $78,104. One thing is there's an asterisk on that next to the fund balance column, and that represents that the 26 school districts that are reporting more than a 10% unreserved fund balance. House Bill 76 from last session waived the 10% limit through June 30, 2025, so allows districts to carry over more than 10%, and that's through basically the life of the COVID relief money, allowing them the flexibility to spend both COVID federal money and state money. And Chair Helen, that completes my section of the presentation. Unless there's any additional questions, I can pass it over to Ms. Riddle.
Are there any other questions from the committee for Ms. Teschner? Seeing none, next up would be Deborah Riddle. Please state your name and place yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
For the record, my name is Deborah Riddle, and I am the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence for the Department of Education and Early Development. So I'm going to talk a little bit about our accountability system, which we call the System for School Success. In 2015, the Every Student Succeeds Act was passed into law, and every state was required to create a plan. The accountability is part of that plan. Within that plan, the department had to engage in quite a bit of stakeholder engagement, and I imagine, I think that many of the legislators were involved in that. We worked with several entities that helped us organize some of the complex pieces of the plan, and the accountability system is one of those. The plans for the accountability system, we had to determine indicators. Some of them were provided to us by the U.S. Department of Education, and some of them we were able to choose on our own. That's where the stakeholder engagement came into play. We had to talk about how our schools were identified and what the exit criteria was from any school designation that the accountability would assign to the to each of the schools. It's really other parts of the plan included pieces on standards and assessments. We had to talk about school improvement and how that integrated in with the school designations as well as the assessment and the accountability. And we also had to provide descriptions with the title programs and how those all, how everything kind of worked together to promote this plan that we had in place. For title programs, we needed to talk about use of funds, activities for each specific program. They all have different requirements and the different activities, as well as monitoring and technical assistance. So one of the pieces, so we created the plans in March of 2019. We amended the plan to look at some of the exit criteria for the English learner, as well as we had to adjust our long-term goals and measures for interim progress. After we ran the plan for a couple of years, we recognized that there were some places that we needed to adjust, and so that was what we did. And we were submitted that to the U.S. Department of Education, and it was approved. So we have 4 different school designations within our accountability system. We have the Comprehensive Support and Improvement, we call CSI, lowest 5%. So through our calculations, and I'll talk a little bit about how those are calculated and the weighting of the indicators, these are the lowest 5%. So when we take the index scores for each of our schools and we rank them from top to bottom, the lowest 5% becomes the comprehensive support and improvement schools. We also have comprehensive support and improvement schools for graduation rate, and these are the schools that whose 4 and 5 year cohorts for graduation is less than 66 2/3% graduation percentage. We have the targeted support and improvement schools. This designation targets subgroups. So if the accountability system is run for each individual subgroup and those lowest performing subgroups, if their index score is less than what the CSI lowest 5% schools are, then they get their own designation as a targeted support and improvement. And this is just to ensure that each subgroup is receiving the support that they need in order to help students succeed. And
Senator Begich.
Just a question there, Deborah. Can a school be a 1-2 and a 3, or is it if you're 1, you aren't considered for the other two? Or?
Yeah, through the chair, that's a great question. If they get one designation.
You just get one.
Just one designation.
Senator Hughes.
And each designation, what does it trigger as far as what the department does? Give me some concrete examples of getting designated CSI. How do you step up and help?
Absolutely. Great question. So comprehensive support, the lowest 5%. Each of these designations, 1, 2, and 3, receive funding. So if it's a comprehensive support and improvement, they get $50,000 per year. If it's a graduation rate or a targeted support and improvement school, they get $25,000 a year. The CSI lowest 5% schools receive, some of them receive a coach. And we can talk a little bit more about that in the school improvement piece. We also provide technical assistance. We have a school improvement team that reaches out and provides technical assistance and helps the districts with their, programs and their funding in order to help move the needle. There are calls with the districts. We offer webinars to help. We are revamping the school improvement system right now in order to provide additional support and a little bit more targeted. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Senator Hughes.
This is odd because, so we're scoring poorly and we get more money and more staff. Those are almost like rewards. I get it. The idea is to help the children. Is there anything to motivate them to do better? It's something like extra required training that the teachers and principals have to take because they're low performing. Is there anything that's more of a bit of a stick than a carrot?
To the chair, we are working on our revamp. We're doing more of that, where there's looking at curriculum choices, looking at specific areas that we can help improve. And so we're working on that right now. Director McKenzie has been an excellent driving force in organizing that.
And follow-up?
Follow-up.
Well, I'd be curious what you developed, because it always goes back to the student. And so if our students aren't quite scoring what we hope and we're getting more money and more staff to come in and help, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but I think we need to motivate them not to fall in those designations. So I'm really curious what you all come up with that will be a greater motivator.
Yeah, and so through the chair, this coming this spring, we do have two very specific things that are being offered for the CSI lowest 5%. And we have we're doing two different programs. One of is the Science of Reading Symposium, and all of the CSI and TSI schools are being asked to join that. We have, the department is going to pay for it to send a team where they can work in team groups and then participate in the Science of Reading Symposium in the last part of April, so April 29th through May 1st. We also have our positive behavior supports and our intervention and supports program, where we are offering that to the CSI lowest 5%. We're sending a cohort of school teams to Tacoma to work with the Northwest PBIS group in order to help get some routines and more positive behavior, not management, but to help the educators move those students in a positive way to help them have the environment for learning to be a little more.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's time for an advertisement again. I just, you know, for me, Senator Hughes has tapped the issue here, which is if the answer is a non, well, you said you're inviting them to join. I mean, if they're going to be receiving your resources, they should be required to come, and you're paying for that. So what the REEDS Act does, and what the work of this committee did, and what the work on the other side has focused on, is that if you're going to get the resources from the department, there are certain things you have to expect, you know, certain outcomes that are expected in certain reporting mechanisms. But more importantly, in the REEDS Act, we actually, those are departmental employees that are placed on the ground because that's the accountability measure. You know, they're there to do the work. They're there to help develop the staff, but they're not, it's just not about throwing cash at the problem and expecting the problem to be better. And I think, you know, wherever you can be more specific with the groups that are being identified and provided resources from the department, and then having those schools and those districts respond to you this is a funded mandate. Let me be clear. This is not an unfunded mandate. You guys are paying for it. So a funded mandate, they should be attending that symposium at the end of April. They should be attending because you're providing them resources to improve education. Otherwise, I'm not sure what you're doing. So from my perspective, I'm becoming a little bit more hardline on this. I want to see our department, and I want to see our school districts, some of whom are in the audience right now, and school boards and others, respond to failing schools in a way that literally improves educational outcomes. I'm not talking about standardized tests. I'm talking about kids just being able to know the basics of how to read, you know, regardless of the language they read in. So, you know, I'm disturbed in a way to hear the description, and that as you describe it, you're saying we've invited them. No, they should have to be there for that, or we're not improving education. And so, just saying, Mr. Chairman, my attitude's shifting on these things.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes.
I want to say amen to Senator Begich. It should be required. When I think about students, if a student doesn't turn his work in or her work in, or they're slipping behind, often they're required to show up for Saturday school, or they might have to miss recess. So I think that a requirement is very reasonable. We want to motivate the schools to do their very best to get their students out of these poor designations. It always goes back to the student for this committee, and so I look forward to hearing how you're going to change that up, and if you'd actually, at Senator Begich's suggestion, instead of an invitation, a requirement.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Please proceed.
Thank you. For the last school designation, it's a universal support, and this is where, for any school that doesn't qualify for designations of 1, 2, and 3, become a universal support. And this is, we provide, basic technical assistance and monitoring for those schools that don't qualify for CSI and TSI schools. Okay, so the accountability indicators for our accountability system, we have them in two different grade spans. We have K-6, and we have 7-12. And so we have the academic achievement indicators for English, language, arts, and math, and those are based on school-level summative assessment proficiency rates. We have academic growth, and this is the percent of students meeting their growth target for the previous year and from the previous year to the current year. English learner progress measures the percentage of students meeting the growth criteria on the Access 2.0 English language proficiency assessment. The chronic absenteeism indicator looks at the percentage of students missing 10% or more of enrolled days. And then we have graduation rate, where we have students in the grade 9 cohort that graduate in 4 to 5 years. This lags by 1 year for the accountability system. And then we also have for K-3, the grade 3 English language proficiency, and we look at the once again, the school level summative assessment proficiency rates for that.
Please proceed.
So each of these indicators is weighted, and so and this was based on stakeholder engagement. So we have the largest weighted group. A weighted indicator is growth, which is 40%. Academic achievement for grades K through 6 is 30%. And for grades 7 through 12, it is 20%. We look at EL progress, or English learner progress, for grades K through 6 is 15%. And for grade 7, it's 10. Chronic absenteeism is 10% in both grades. Graduation rate for the secondary is 20%, and our grade 3 ELA is 5% for our grades K through 6. These weights play into the calculations, and I'll talk about that on the next slide. So each indicator is assigned a point value, and this is based on the actual scores that the students receive as well as the weights. This is a calculation that is done. We do this internally, we double check, and we also have an external contractor who verifies all of our results, and so we know that everything is calculated correctly. So the point values for each indicator ranges from 0 to 100. 100 is being the highest. And you can see the point values here on the screen.
Just a question here for me.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Deborah, does it mean that you're measuring those schools that are in one of those categories, one of those first three, or are you measuring all schools?
All schools.
Oh, so, and then in measuring the three categories, if they rise to a certain level, do they cease getting then the support, or what happens there?
So
if they pop out of one of those categories or all those categories?
So through the chair, each of the designated schools are designated for 3 years, except for graduation rate, they can come out earlier, but they're designated for 3 years. And in their school improvement plan, what they have to submit to us, you know, they have to do a needs assessment, they have to have some goals and action steps, and then we check on them to see how they're doing, and they have to determine how are they measuring success and what data they're using to double check against that. And that gives us a chance to help them over the course of those 3 years to, when the accountability system is run again, they will improve enough to come out of the designated status.
Follow up. And if they haven't?
Then they go back in for, they're redesignated. For comprehensive and support, the CSI lowest 5%, they can stay in there. If they are a targeted support and improvement school, and that's for a basic subgroup, They'll after 3 years they'll be transferred into the CSI lowest 5%.
So, Mr. Chairman, part of the Moore settlement, which targeted support to failing schools, that was part of what was litigated in that settlement, because the department hadn't been doing enough and the department had in a sense readily admitted that they weren't able to do enough of that on the record numerous times in front of this committee. And not for want of trying. But what it brings me to is this point of, if we're providing the targeted resource and we're still not seeing outcomes related to that, I'm curious what the next effort from the department is, other than just sustained maintenance of a current situation. What are the, you know, for many years, I worked in the field of juvenile crime and delinquency, and one of the areas that we worked on was a thing called graduated sanctions. So graduated sanctions are you give a young person a relatively modest penalty with the knowledge that if they don't move forward, they're going to get a higher penalty and then a higher penalty, which works with kids who are capable of understanding consequential behavior. There are some kids who can't, but for the most part. So what are our graduated, and I hate to use the word sanctions, but what is our graduated approach here if a district or a school, a district's school, continues to find itself on that list? What is the department's plan for how to move them from the list in working with the school district? Because just reporting it and maintaining what's not working doesn't sound to me like a plan. So forgive me for being critical today. It's Monday morning. It's Valentine's Day. I'm perhaps it's beautiful outside, but I'm a little out of sorts. So let's work on that. So what is the plan from the department?
So through the chair, Senator Begich, we are, as we're redoing our school improvement plan, which might be a good idea for a separate presentation where we can get into that more deeply, because accountability and they go together, but the school improvement is bigger. We are working with on revamping the school improvement, and we are working with our Region 16 Comprehensive Center to come up with some a new plan and a new way of looking at school improvement. Right now, we have our first cohort of districts who are in comprehensive support who are going to be going through a pilot with an empowerment specialist who will guide them through a more strategic analysis of their programs, of their resources, looking at the programs and the effectiveness of the programs, guiding them through action steps, setting up some really solid action steps that are evidence-based, and then working through with some, what does success look like? What are the measurement tools that they're going to look like? And then providing reports to the department as to what that's going to look at. Something that's different that is going to happen as part of their school improvement plan process, which hasn't been done in the past, is that when they come up with their school improvement plan, they're going to have to present it to their school board, as well as having some department staff there to help, for the accountability piece. It just makes it more transparent. This is where we're going. This is what we want to do and get some stakeholder engagement from the community, because we feel that it's really important to really engage the community and the parents in this plan and kind of pull them forward. And that is a key piece of the school improvement planning that we have that we're working on right now.
Follow up, Senator Begich.
So I would suggest you do take a look at some of the elements of public elements in the READS Act and the way we're approaching that in that bill, because what we focus on there is indeed not just accountability from the department, but giving the community members, the parents and others, fuller and freer access to information so they can hold their own school boards accountable, which I think is essential in this process. So I would ask you to look at that, and I'm pleased to hear that you're reexamining that. That makes that I feel much more comfort with hearing that. Thank you, Deborah.
Just a quick I can ping pong back and forth between these two all day long. But, that's all right. It makes it lively. You guys ask and answer many great questions. But so I just want to confirm this your presentation is basically Alaska's attempt to develop an accountability program to conform with the ESSA in 2015. And we haven't yet enacted this because the pandemic problems, and you need so many years of tracking it before we can actually evaluate the schools in Alaska, correct?
Well, through the chair, this has been enacted. We enacted this back in 2017-18, and then 18-19 is our most current. We received a waiver from the U.S. Department of Education to hold those designations, due to we didn't have an assessment 1 year, and then the most states found that the assessment participation was low for 2021, and so the designations have held. But we have run this before. We are enacting it, and these are the indicators, and we do have.
The schools are receiving. Are receiving.
Right, and I have some data if that's helpful about designations. I think our highest index value is 99.41. Our lowest is 8.33. That's the range. That's all the all of the schools in the state.
Senator Hughes.
Yes, and thank you, and I appreciate the presentation, but I would think. And maybe this is a suggestion for future years. Instead of just sharing with us how you evaluate and determine the designation, I think paired up with that is what the department does. And one of the things I look through to see, do we have data that shows what the department has done in the past to help these schools? And, how long has it taken them to move out of these designations? It sounds like the data maybe wasn't very good, and that's why you're looking at changing it up, which I'm happy to hear. But in the future, when we when we bring to the committees how we evaluate and what we determine as the designation, it needs to be paired up with what the department does to change it, with data to back that up, and then so we can see, you know, how they've actually been helped. And so part of your looking at changing it up, my question is, are you looking what other states did, in addition, of course, SB 111 and our reading program, that will tremendously help. Are there any other tools or things that you've seen that other states have done that have helped? It seems like, I'm trying to remember, is it Dr. Burke who talked to us about some of the things that they did having to do with performance and different things to motivate. Are we looking at anything outside what's in SB 111?
Through the chair, yes, we are. We are looking at what's in SB 111. We're also looking at what other states are doing, and through our Region 16 Comprehensive Center, they have access to resources of what other states are doing as well. And so we're kind of looking to see what's going on in other states, and we are also working with a company, ADI, and I apologize for not having the acronym for that one spelled out. They are some experts on the science of reading and experts on school improvement who are helping us design this new school improvement system to help with the designations and improvement to move the needle.
Good to hear. Thank you.
All right.
Please proceed.
Okay, the subgroups for the targeted support and improvement groups are included on the screen, and these are the basic subgroups that we report to data on to the Department of Education, U.S. Department of Education, that we collect from the districts. And so all of these subgroups, when we run the accountability system, we run the accountability system for each subgroup. And so they have the points, they have the weighting, and each of these subgroups receive an index score, and that's how we determine if they're TSI, if they're a targeted support and improvement school. So if their index score is the same or less than the cutoff for the CSI lowest 5%, then they're identified as a targeted support and improvement school for that particular subgroup. So one of the things that when you look at accountability system data that we have on our website, you will see some asterisks or some like blank pieces, because some of our schools are really small and we have to really protect the confidentiality for the students. And so our minimum N is 10. So if an indicator or any group like third graders or fifth graders and there's less than 10, then that is not, it's suppressed and it doesn't show. So you know, if you're wanting a spreadsheet of data, you may see a lot of asterisks, which can be frustrating, but it's necessary for the students. We also have what's called an 80-20 rule. So if for any indicator, if the value is between 0 or 20, it's going to be a 0. If it's 80 to 100, it's going to be 100. Because less than 20, an index or a value that's less than 20, there could be a student could be identified. So we want to protect the confidentiality for students. And this plays a kind of a key role when you're looking at maybe some accountability indicators for the smaller schools. There might be something for math, but nothing for ELA or vice versa. And that's because the scores were, the value was between 0 or 20. So it'll be a 0.
Chairman, just a quick
Senator Baggage.
So, but you still, in that instance, you would, if indeed a school is having difficulty, you would know internally and be
yes.
able to provide them support in that grade, correct?
Right. And so we also have what we call a small school review. So we do have some schools that are small and there just isn't enough to run a full accountability. So what we do is we get a committee together, we talk with the principal, we talk with the superintendent, and we come up with a kind of determine what their designation would be based on the needs of a more, I guess, more personal approach to those small schools.
Thank you.
One of the things that we that helps determine the part of the indicators is we have the long-term goals and measures of interim progress. We're required to look at how far away a school might be from a proficiency. And so we will look at, like, for instance, if a school is 70 or let's say 80%, that's a bad example, say 60% are not proficient, we would take half of that, which is 30%. And we would figure out what the goals would be or the interim benchmarks would be for 10 years to get them from the 60 up 30 points to a different level, so that we're it would be unreasonable to think that they're going to be 100% proficient within 10 years, but we can take half of the distance between proficiency and create some benchmarks or some goals for them. And that's something that we do for every district, and that is what helps determine some of those indicators, the growth indicators specifically. Okay, so the overall index value is based on the October 1st enrollment, the calculations. There needs to be at least two indicators to calculate an accountability score. And one of the two indicators must be one of the academic achievement, growth, graduation rate, or English learner progress. And those are just the kind of the baselines for calculating that accountability system. For the 2022 falls of designations, we are having some challenges, and we are working with our external contractor to help us figure out some solutions. Without any assessment data for 2019-2020, we can't calculate growth because we need to have 2 years of data. We had a very low participation rate in 2021. We had 65. Kelly will tell you later what our participation rate was, but it was too low to be able to have confidence in the data that we were to use for an accountability. So, and then we're going to have a new assessment in the spring of 2022, which is once again a new assessment, which is going to we have to figure out a methodology in order to be able to calculate growth. That's the yes.
Oh, Connor Hughes.
Is the new assessment a newly developed type of assessment? So you can't. It's like comparing apples to oranges. Then is that what I'm hearing? So you're going to have a couple of years to be able to see what's happening?
We're working with we have a technical advisory committee, which is a set of national experts who help us to talk through this. We have our contractor, and we are working with the U.S. Department of Education as well as our internal staff to come up with some really sound ways to do this, to do the designations. They've been held for a while, and there's a desire to see what kind of progress districts have made.
So the fiscal support for this program is coming from federal grants?
So through the Chair Holland, the funding for the school improvement and for this designation, we have the school improvement funds are part of Title I, 1003A, and that's what we help the districts with. Working on these growth indicators and calculating those, that's a general fund.
So what was the last thing you said?
Calculating the indicators, that's a general fund, comes from general funds.
So, and in the cases where low participation rate or lack of data, we just continue what the school had received in the previous year for their fiscal support, their financial support?
Through the chair, yes. And that is all through Title, it's called the School Improvement Grants, which is part of Title I, Part A, 1003A funds.
Thank you.
And we are working also on district accountability. We have two options that we're working through. Is looking at trying to find a way to be able to designate districts. That is something that is outlined in SB 111, and so we're trying to figure out a way to do that with the information that we have. One option was take the percentage of schools in a district having TSI, CSI, and coming up with an index value, or take an average of all the schools within the district. And
Mr. Chair?
Senator Hughes.
So once you figure that out, and then you say, okay, district, we see a problem here, What does that trigger? We talked about what it triggers for individual schools being designated in a certain category, but what happens once you develop this way to score a district, then what happens?
So through the chair, that is, we're working on, so how Alaska does school improvement is by a school. What we're trying to do with the PBIS, the positive behavior and intervention supports, and the science of reading is to get those districts with those CSI, TSI schools to come up with teams to move forward and work on that. As we're revamping our school improvement process, we're working primarily with the schools first, and then we'll be able to, phase two would be to pull those districts in. We're starting to do that with involving the school board in the review of the school improvement plans and having a and then looking at the data, because we can look at the different school districts and we can see where there's a high percentage of CSI, TSI schools and, you know, formulate a plan that way. But that is coming up. We're working on that right now.
Follow up?
I would just kind of, as we were talking earlier about the individual schools having requirements, you know, if they're scoring in have low scores, that if districts are having that same problem, there'd be some kind of requirement for, because if it's pervasive, the district administration probably needs some extra boost. And I'm not talking about more staff and money. I'm talking about requirement to know to help equip them, to equip their school principals and teaching staff to improve. So I'm hoping that it won't just be carrots again, but there will be something really motivate them not to, as a district, have low performance overall, but that administration is working extra hard so that they get a better score as a district.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, and I agree that there has to be accountability members. I think but I think, Mr. Chairman, in the work I do, we call it rapid cycle testing. It's very basic. I'm certain this is what it sounds like you're doing now, which is you're going to sit down with the school district and the board, and you're going to say, this is our plan, this is our theory of change, this is what we expect to see as the outcome. And you'll be revisiting that in a fairly robust manner. Because if the change doesn't occur, you'll be able to say, all right, we tried these five things. They didn't work. So where do we focus now? And because I haven't seen that in the past. And what I want to see is so rapid cycle change is something we often use to determine as quickly as possible whether something's moving forward or not moving forward. And it sounds like, Deborah, that your shop is working on precisely that kind of more robust measure. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, that is true.
Thank you for that.
All right, please proceed.
And that concludes the accountability portion.
With no other questions from the committee on that section, next up, I believe, will be Kelly Manning.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Riddle. Oh, you're welcome to keep your seat.
Stay if you want. Kelly's like, please don't leave.
This is her first time.
All right, so Ms. Riddle, if you'd, Ms. Manning, if you'd please pick up on the assessment portion.
Yes, good morning. Through the chair, my name is Kelly Manning. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence for the Department of Education. And I'm going to be sharing recent history with the performance evaluation for Alaska schools. Is that a little closer? Yeah, got it.
And I will tell you, you're allowed, I should have mentioned, you know, when presenting, you're allowed to unmask if you care to. You are totally welcome to stay.
Can you hear me better now?
That probably will help. It was,
okay.
The distance was probably what was the problem.
Okay, great. I'll keep that a little closer. So great. So I'm going to start with a little bit of recent history on the performance evaluation for Alaska schools, the PEAKS assessment, as well as the direction we're going with our new Alaska system of academic readiness, our new assessment system.
And if you care, while Alaska has participated in the NAEP, the NEEP, as well.
Yes.
And if you can maybe comment, because I believe NEEP is going away as far as Alaska is concerned. Are we going to still participate in that?
We are still participating in NAEP. Yeah. I don't have any slides today on NAEP, but I can certainly provide further information.
I was concerned about us leaving NEEP, which we've been using for years. But okay, proceed.
Yeah, no, we are required to participate in NEEP and are continuing to do so, yeah. All right, so the performance evaluation for Alaska schools is our most recent statewide summative assessment. Statewide summative assessment is one part in effectively evaluating what students know and can do. It assesses student knowledge of the statewide education standards. And in order to ensure an excellent education for every student every day, we must measure if the curriculum and instruction have been effectively employed so that the student knows and understands the content. Statewide assessment information is used to inform families, educators, and other stakeholders of how our students perform at the statewide level. It can inform policy, curriculum updates, professional development, instructional decisions when combined with other assessments and screener data, and parent support recommendations. Summative data is end of year data. It tells us how we did the previous year and is most useful at the district, school, state, and policy level. Other types of assessment, like screeners, interim assessments, benchmarks, and unit assessments, can be combined with summative data to give a more holistic picture of an individual student's performance. Summative data is a piece of that bigger picture. Since 2017, the Department of Education has implemented the Performance Evaluation of Alaska Schools, the PEAKS assessment. This is our statewide summative assessment. It is a standards-based assessment that is provided to students at grades 3 through 9 and assesses students in their understanding in English, language arts, and math. The results are used to inform statewide decisions, as Ms. Riddle was sharing, our accountability system, as well as school report cards that are posted on the state website and other policy decisions within the Department of Education. As Ms. Riddle mentioned, the accountability was waived for the 2019-2020 and 2020-2021 school years. We do not have 2019-2020 data because the assessment did not occur. We do have 2020-2021 data, but as was shared, the participation rate is lower, and I'll be covering that. So the 2018 to 2019 statewide PEAKS performance data, we had roughly a 91% participation rate. So historically much higher than in our most recent assessment year, with about 39% proficiency at the statewide level for English language arts. 39, you can see here, is advanced proficient, so students that met proficiency or above. And we had 39% for English language arts and about 35.72 for mathematics. That's proficiency and above.
Really quickly.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kelly, does the department have a target for where they want the advanced proficiency? You know, is there at least a target that you're shooting for?
The goal of the statewide assessment is to assess where we are at. We don't have a statewide target that I'm aware of. It is more to measure where we are at and tell us how we're performing.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Okay. So as mentioned, we did not have assessment data for 2019 to 2020 due to the pandemic. In 2020 to 2021, we did provide the assessment. However, our participation rate was significantly lower than usual, partly due to the fact that the accountability was waived, and so districts had a little bit more flexibility due to the challenges that they were still facing in the 2020 to 2021 school year. So this data, while it, and I have some more slides that talk a little bit more about this, while it does give us some information, it is limited in our ability to use this data to drive decisions in the same way as in a typical school year.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Hughes.
So in follow-up to Senator Begich's question about the target, you're not aware, and perhaps we we could get this provided to us later is what is the commissioner's target and the state school board's target, because I'm guessing that there actually is something that has been stated as a target. I would hope, and if there isn't, there should be.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Begich.
And I would just add, thank you, Mr. Chairman, that you really, I hope future legislatures acknowledge the fact that you can't really compare 18-19, there is no 19-20, and this is a 30% lower participation rate. These are non-comparable numbers, and the department should not, let me be clear, should not try some graphic that shows numbers like straight line comparisons here, because it would be inaccurate at best, or at least should have an asterisk to explain the loss of data, because without the data, it's impossible to compare year to year. The first robust year where you have a similar 90% could be compared to 18-19, and that likely would be this coming year, I would suspect. But please don't show us ever a graphic, because
this is slide 31.
I am at slide 31, but it says it right there. Oh my God, it's right there. Well, thank you. See, this
always
is
ahead
it.
Of your time, Senator Begich.
Patience. Okay.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you. Exactly to what Senator Begich is speaking to, although PEAKS assessments were administered in spring 2021, DEED does strongly caution against comparing 2021 PEAKS data to previous years at the statewide level. Due to the significant difference in participation rate, we cannot compare the data sets missing from 2019 and 2020 and the participation rate difference for the 2020 to 2021. Schools may be able to drill down at the student level, but DEED is extremely limited in our ability to use this data to inform decisions moving forward. So, though the last few years of data are limited and DEED is inhibited in using this data to report on student performance, this gap does lend an opportunity to consider how we might systematically approach assessment in a new way. The Alaska System of Academic Readiness, the AK-STAR, is the new innovative balanced assessment system that DEED is currently in the process of implementing. So DEED solicited for a new assessment that would take an innovative approach to ensuring that standards, assessment, and instruction are in line, that student growth outcomes improve. We need to see Alaska youth succeed. Educators and education stakeholders understand assessment data and how it's used to inform instruction, and that all Alaska educators have a deep understanding of assessment, its purpose, and when and how to use it. So these goals that are laid out, this is our objective goals for the new assessment system. DEED has contracted with NWEA, which is their name that they go by, and they are developing this new assessment system for Alaska. NWEA has provided MAP Growth as an interim assessment to Alaska districts for many years. Prior to beginning this process, 50 of the 54 Alaska districts were using MAP Growth as their interim assessment, and that's provided by, that's a NWEA interim assessment product. And so as we move into our new system, NWEA is developing a through-year balanced assessment that incorporates MAP Growth into our into a through-year system with the new statewide summative assessment. The interim assessment checks in on student progress periodically throughout the year. And MAP Growth provides instructional data that lets teachers know how students are progressing in their knowledge periodically, how their students measure against national norms, and provides recommendations for how to target instruction. One of the things you'll note at the bottom there is one of the goals of this assessment is to reduce testing time. And so the spring summative assessment will incorporate the interim data. And we're working with, again, the Technical Advisory Committee, NWEA's psychometricians to reduce our testing by having the spring assessment serve multiple functions. And so working on that, that's a really innovative approach to assessment, but it will thread the interim and summative into a through-year system that is cohesive and then also reduces assessment time for students. So this slide shows a map of what that assessment system will look like once we get to year two. So this first year is a development year. It'll look very similar for districts, but when we get into next year, this is the map of what districts will be able to provide. So in the fall, students will be assessed using MAP Growth, the interim assessment. This will provide a projected proficiency score, which will let districts and teachers know how their students are anticipated to perform on the summative assessment. They will also receive a RITS score, which is a score that that the NWEA has developed. It's a RASH unit score, and this is a score that districts are used to seeing for their students that measures how their students are progressing. That will be the same for the winter assessment, and then in the spring, they will have a single summative assessment that provides the proficiency score as well as the RITS score. So those will be interconnected, they will inform one another and provide a more cohesive assessment system for districts to track how students are doing through the year, and then as we get to the end, provide that proficiency data. This is our AKSTAR development timeline. As you can see, our assessment team is working very closely with the NWEA team to map out the new assessment and get through quite a heavy lift of developing a really innovative and different approach to assessment. This spring, we will provide the first AKSTAR summative administration. It will not have that linked score. After that assessment has been provided, there will be a linking study, an alignment study. So there's multiple standard setting, multiple studies that then use the information to inform the system as we move forward. And then when we get to the 2022-2023 school year, it will be that cohesive system that we've mapped out. One of the items that we are working on really closely with NWEA is assessment literacy training. This diagram really helps to see. For many, many years, the department has provided training on how to ensure that we have an effective assessment. And so districts will continue to receive that training to ensure that the information that we receive is accurate and that we can use that data to inform our decision making. In addition to that, we are adding really robust assessment literacy training that will speak more specifically to what does the information tell the teacher? How can they use the information that they're receiving? It's a data literacy training, it's assessment and instruction training, and really drilling down for teachers on, once you get this data, how do you use it to inform instruction? There's three components to the professional learning that we're providing. I'm going to start with the second. There's live remote training where educators throughout the state have access to online live trainings, professional learning opportunities to be presented assessment literacy and data literacy content. There's self-directed learning so that they can go in and guide themselves through the instructional information on how they can use the data. And then we're very excited about the Certified Facilitator Training Program, which is an opportunity for every district to develop a facilitator in their district who will have in-depth professional learning that they can bring back to their district on assessment literacy. So we'll be developing a certified facilitator in each district on assessment literacy to build their capacity. And this is the professional learning that is being provided, the live professional learning. This is a page from the catalog, and district educators, in addition to all of the learning opportunities, they also have the opportunity to get continuing education units and much more to come on that in the coming years.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. I'm not leaving because I'm not pleased with I have a school district waiting for me, but I want you to know that that was, I'm so pleased to see that. I was not aware you were working on that. In particular, the training of folks locally to be able to do the work of facilitating these assessments. So I just want to say I didn't realize they were working on this, Mr. Chairman and Madam Majority Leader. I think it's actually a very big step in the right direction. So, but thank you.
Thank you.
Glad you made it to the end. I know he stayed a little bit late I have a few quick questions. One would be, what grades does the PEAK assessment focus on?
Grades 3 through 9.
3 through 9?
Yes.
Is AK Star going to be the same?
Yes, grade? It will be the same.
And NAEP, what grades do they, is it mostly focused on like 4th and 8th, like they look at the?
It's 4 and 8.
Just the snapshot of 4th and 8th grade. And that's probably all the questions I have. Senator Hughes?
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. All right. Well, thank you all so much. Deputy Commissioner Teschner, Ms. Manning, and Ms. Riddle, thank you all for presenting today. And with no other questions from the committee, we are going to wrap it up. Our next meeting is Wednesday, February 16th at 9 a.m. And I'll just say, Deputy Commissioner Teschner, did you have any final comments? Okay. All right. Our next meeting is Wednesday, February 16th at 9 a.m., and we are adjourned at 10:24.